2007 session of the House Economic and Workforce Development Committee. We are in session. And I'm going to hear Senate Bill 725 first, because we have folks here from Ledge Council to explain some of the considerations here. I'm going to do, I think, Senate Bill 492 second and 665 last, so I'm going to just flip the order here so that any of you who are testifying kind of have an idea of what we're doing. With that, I'm going to open a, I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 725. And Ellen, if you could please remind us what this bill is and why we have it here.
Thank you, Chair Witt and members of the committee. Senate Bill 725 was a bill that you all passed out unanimously with the dash 2 amendments, and you did that on, that would have been Friday? Yes, Friday. And subsequent to that, and actually during the hearing, you might recall that Representative Lim brought up the fact that Senate Bill 2 amended some of the same statutes that Senate Bill 725 amended. And then, in fact, after you all passed it out, Legislative Council did a conflict check, as they do on all of the bills, and discovered that Senate Bill 725 amends statutes that Senate Bill 2 amended, and it also conflicted with another bill that's already passed, which is Senate Bill 83. Senate Bill 2, the conflicts are not substantive, but Ledge Council can explain exactly what the nature of the conflict is and how it's resolved. And some of that involves statutes. The policy-oriented decision is that Senate Bill 725 and its housekeeping for the Bureau of Labor and Industries in order to be able to contract with the federal government to enforce our anti-discrimination legislation and housing needed to do a number of housekeeping measures, and one of those was to repeal a specific statute that then Senate Bill 2 also amended. And so that's kind of the policy choice for you all. And in addition, you'll notice in the dash 3 amendments that the specific statutes that Senate Bill 2 amended, should it become law, are kind of laid out for you all so you understand exactly how Senate Bill 725 and Senate Bill 2 fit together. In particular, the religious exemption that I'm sure all of you are familiar with in Senate Bill 2 is not affected by the passage of Senate Bill 725. And I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ellen. Do the committee members, do you all have dash 3 amendments?
Yes.
Because for some reason I'm not finding mine. I don't know if it's in my stack here.
It's in the packet.
Chair Witt?
Yes.
Can I ask Ellen a question?
Sure, please do.
Yeah, thank you. This bill in no way implements Senate Bill 2, though. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative Drodd, that's correct. It in no way implements Senate Bill 2. They simply amend the same statutes. And I guess what I should have said also is that Senate Bill 83 is another statute that amends the same statute that 725 addresses. And Senate Bill 83 was a housekeeping measure, and they replaced in numerous statutes the term disabled person with the term person with a disability. And so you'll see that term used in your dash 3 amendments.
And Representative Gerard, we have a Dave Hendricks here who I think may be very informative here. If I could ask him please to come forward. Good morning, and thank you for making yourself available here for our committee.
No problem, Chair Witt. Chair Witt, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Legislative Council's office. The conflicts that we're talking about here that are addressed in the dash 3 amendments are true sexual conflicts between what a couple of other bills did to the same statutes that are amended by 725. We do conflict amendments when we cannot take that statute and take what this bill did and what this bill did and actually put them together in a way that won't, well, they're doing two different things that just won't work. Now, if one, the other bill, like Senate Bill 2, is merely adding a subsection, that's not a true conflict. You know, it works both conceptually, and it doesn't create a textual conflict, so we don't do an amendment for those sections. But the ones that truly conflict, we look at them and put them together in a way so that both policies can work, unless the policies are conflicting, and then we would bring it back to the committee and say, you need to decide which way you want to go. So that's what these amendments do. Takes those provisions in the two other bills, Senate Bill 2 and the other bill that dealt with persons with disabilities, and make the amendments made by those bills work together. And on Senate Bill 2, they're all conditioned on if Senate Bill 2 becomes law. And it's the same with the other bill as well. And with Senate Bill 2, we always assume there's the possibility of referral on any bill, even though the great majority of them do not get referred. We always phrase it in terms, if it becomes law, then this is what how it will work when it goes together.
Thank you very much. Representative Dahl, before we do, just Representative Barnhart, good morning. We're doing conflict amendments -3 for Senate Bill 725. Representative Dahl.
Dave, I want to be sure and understand that. If Senate Bill 725 comes out of here across the floor, becomes law, and Senate Bill 2 is challenged, what's the impact on 725?
Yeah. Chair Witt, Representative Dahlem, if it's challenged, the law, Senate Bill 2 would not go into effect on the and consequently would be held in abeyance until there was a vote at the November election of next year. And then afterwards, if it passed, if it was approved 30 days after the election, it would become effective, and at which point we would need to make the adjustments that are shown in this bill. If it does not pass at that point, this is all contingent if Senate Bill 2 does, 725 is unaffected and goes on the way it is. So it would not be affected by a referral and failure to achieve approval from the voters. And, of course, if it's not referred at all, then, you know, within 90 days after the end of session, the time to collect signatures, then at that point, Senate Bill 2 becomes law, and these things happen automatically as part of the editing process.
Anything further? Thank you very, very much, Mr. Hendricks. Certainly appreciate that.
No problem.
Okay. We are in a work session, so it's not my intent to be taking full-blown testimony, but if there are other folks who would have something important to add to our decision-making process on this, now's the time. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone. Committee members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we amend Senate Bill 725 with the -3 amendment.
Thank you. Vice Chair Riley moves the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 725. Discussion on that motion? Yes.
The only question I would have is, do you need to withdraw the -2 amendments, or is this to modify what we've already passed?
Ellen?
Chair Witt, Representative Gerard, I did ask Dave Hendricks a similar, though not as a direct question, and -3 incorporates the -2 amendments.
Okay.
And so
I would assume that, but I just want to be sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Gerard. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a gut and stuff, is it?
No.
No, thank you.
These are conflict amendments, is all they are.
Right. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing no further discussion, is there any objection to the adoption of the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 725? Seeing none, they stand adopted. Vice Chair Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 725A as amended to the floor with a DPAS recommendation.
Vice Chair Riley moves Senate Bill 725A with the -3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That is A, right?
Yes.
Yes. Discussions on that motion? I'm seeing none. On the question, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
Aye.
Representative Grodd?
Aye.
Representative Hogan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Wood?
Aye. Senate Bill 725, having received the necessary majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Committee members, what's your pleasure regarding the consent calendar? Appropriate? Sure. Representative Gerard?
I don't want to say that. It's not because I don't want to carry it, but... we might need some explaining, but
Well, we've had a lot of questions on it, and the questions have been cleared up very well, and I'm sure that some of my colleagues will have similar questions, and I'm sure that Representative Barnhart would be glad to answer them.
Is there anyone who would like to carry this bill on the floor? I will. I'll carry it. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 725. Thank you, committee members. And next, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 492A. Ellen, if you would please remind us of this one.
Thank you, Chair Whip, members of the committee. Senate Bill 492, to adopt the amendment that will be in its B form, authorizes the regulation of professional and amateur mixed martial arts events. It defines a mixed martial art as a combative sporting contest between two competitors who use a variety of techniques and holds. It requires the licensing of competitors, managers, and promoters. It restricts mixed martial art and professional boxing matches to competitors who are at least 18 years of age. It changes the name of the Oregon State Boxing and Wrestling Commission to the Oregon State Athletic Commission. It establishes the Athletic Commission Medical Advisory Committee with 5 members appointed by the Superintendent of the State Police. It directs the committee to recommend fitness criteria for pre- and post-fight exams, subsequences allowed in contestants' corners, emergency procedures, and safety equipment. It requires the committee to nominate physicians to serve as ringside doctors for boxing and mixed martial arts events, and it requires the assignment of medical personnel to each boxing or mixed martial arts event. It increases the maximum civil penalty authorized for a violation of these statutes from $2,500 to $100,000, and it requires the commission to establish by rule a method for setting civil penalties that is based on the severity of the violation, any previous violations, and the gross ticket sales receipts if the violation is related to an event. And you should have the dash A7 amendments. And these amendments, I think we have folks here that can speak to them, but basically what they do is address the concerns of the City of Eugene, who currently had regulations in place regulating mixed martial arts events, and they wanted to be sure that those regulations would remain in effect prior to them being preempted by the bill that you all are considering. And they also wanted to make it clear that the difference between regulating professional and amateurs in these events.
Thank you very much. And we carried this bill over, and I think we had Brad Darcy, who was awaiting last time. So welcome back again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Brad Darcy. I currently serve as Executive Director of the Oregon Boxing and Wrestling Commission, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today on Senate Bill 492. As a committee will remember, the bill is intended to update the statutes governing the Oregon Boxing and Wrestling Commission. The primary issue driving the need for this bill has been the need to provide regulatory oversight of unrestricted amateur mixed martial arts competitions taking place throughout the state. At the first hearing, we identified 3 issues that warranted amending the bill. A work group was formed, and I believe we have effectively addressed the identified issues with these amendments. The first was making sure that the intent of the bill to give the commission the authority to regulate amateur mixed martial arts competitions was reflected in the language of the bill, and we've made changes in the bill to make that intent clear. The second issue addressed in the amendments was the concern that we should not apply the prohibition against minors being licensed as professional fighters to boxing. We have deleted the reference to boxing and continue the prohibition for mixed martial arts. As the regulation of mixed martial arts includes amateur competitors, we strongly support this prohibition. And the third issue related to the concern expressed by the City of Eugene that an existing ordinance related to regulating amateur mixed martial arts should remain in place until such time the Commission can promulgate rules governing the regulation of amateur mixed martial arts. We have effectively addressed that issue. The Oregon Boxing and Wrestling Commission is working hard to meet its original mission to provide effective regulation of commercially driven ring sport promotions. Senate Bill 492 provides the Commission an opportunity to continue meeting that mission. I thank the committee for your time and be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very, very much. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading the amendment, and especially the bold-faced material in the A7 amendment. And I'm quickly trying to parse through it to see what it actually does. And it's clear that once the superintendent of state police adopts rules, then things that are related to the sections that you've named here, city or county regulations that apply to those areas are no longer in effect. What about the sections that you have not named? Do any of them leave any authority in local government to make regulations or rules or ordinances or whatever? You haven't mentioned section 1, 2, 6, 8, 7 or 8, 15, 17 through 25. Those aren't meant. Those are excluded because you didn't mention them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I'm not sure. I assumed that basically the effect of this amendment would be to have a seamless handoff between what the city's intent with their ordinance was and our intent with the changes made by this bill.
Thank you. One final, if I may.
Yes.
I expect the city isn't here, but let me ask it. They are here. Okay, I'll ask a question of the city. Thank you.
Representative Barnhart, would it be at all helpful if we had the legislative council to explain any of this?
No, I don't think I need.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Representative Barnhart.
My question, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
thank you.
Please.
What's the city's attitude toward this amendment?
For the record, my name is Brenda Wilson. I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene. The City of Eugene is very supportive of this amendment. The City of Eugene has the only local ordinance in the state right now to regulate amateur mixed martial arts, and the city adopted the ordinance in order to fill a gap that was left by the state. That gap will continue to be filled by our local ordinance until the superintendent adopts the rules, and we're okay with this.
You're ready to get out of the business.
We do not want to be in the business of regulating amateur mixed martial arts participants. No.
That was the answer I had to find out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Darcy, I'm kind of curious, maybe not such an important issue, but the name being changed from Boxing and Wrestling to the Athletic Commission, is it the intent that this commission is going to regulate football, soccer, and, professional track and field? I guess I could go on. I mean, the term Athletic Commission seems to indicate to me that this is broad over a wide spectrum of athletics and not really contained to ring sports, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holby, no. We have no intention of broadening the scope of what we currently oversee and regulate. The real driver for the name change is, frankly, from an agency standpoint, it signals nationally that we are up in front with other commissions that have made this similar change. It indicates, a more modern approach, a forward-thinking commission, what would generally be considered as major commissions in this industry, Nevada, New Jersey, California, and states like that have made this change as really kind of a signal from a strictly boxing commission to include these new sports that have exploded in frequency and popularity. That's basically what's driving it. But in no way do we intend to try and roll into what we do any additional sports that aren't listed out in our statutes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
You know, just maybe it's just me personally, but it seems very misleading to me then, the name. I'm curious, are there other commissions in the state that regulate professional basketball, professional football, soccer, or other sorts of athletics?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holvey, I'm unaware of any that do such. I mean, there are generally, I'm assuming, more amateur-oriented or programs like that for amateur sports. Pro sports like the ones you mentioned, my understanding is, are generally regulated by leagues, you know, by the sports themselves. This particular area, the state is always, or not always, has basically taken upon to provide independent government or regulation of these sports because of the inherent nature of them.
Thank you. I just might note that I'm just uncomfortable with that broad name. I think it's misleading.
Yes, Representative.
Isn't this more a accident of history? In that the only sports regulated at the turn of the century were boxing and wrestling. I think it's a historic nomenclature, maybe even 150 years old.
Mr. Chairman, Rissom Delm, that'd be my recollection, too, that the rest of sports maybe just didn't have the inherent need to be regulated the same way as these others are.
I don't remember back that far.
Well, actually, it's only 7 years ago, so.
Thank you. I think Vice Chair Lim was next to it.
The same line of questions. Do we have a clear definition of what it means, Oregon State Athletic Commission? There's a definition on mixed martial arts and boxing, things like that. Do we have defined what the Oregon State Athletic Commission, because the name is too broad, it's misleading, and I concur.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, my feeling on that is that, you know, throughout the bill we speak specifically to the sports that we oversee, and it can always, you know, any questions that might derive from the name could be answered through the way the bill is written, is would be my feeling on that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I simply wanted to note that the sports that Representative Holvey referred to primarily are regulated nationally by large national organizations. The non-professional aspects of those sports are regulated by freestanding leagues or associations, or by the municipality that pays for them, or that operates them. And I was trying to see if I could find that definition of what the responsibilities of the newly named Athletic Commission are. And I'm simply not coming up with it quickly. It's in an existing statute that we're amending. I just can't figure out which one.
Chair Witt, Representative Barnhart, if you look on your Angrist bill, page 5, section 6.
I'm already past that part. Okay, thank you. Page 5, section 6.
Thank you, Ellen.
Oh, yes, and there's the definition in subsection 1 of ORS 463.113. Which are regulated the promotion of all professional boxing, mixed martial arts, and entertainment wrestling events in this state. Commission shall adopt rules for conducting, and so forth. So there's the definition right there.
Vice Chair Lim.
And even 2006, There has been 72 events throughout the state, and some of them are not regulated, some of them are regulated. What's the criteria? Because the people who are having some kind of an event, they are not sure whether this should be regulated or not, but by mistake, they might not. Then later, boxing the commission come out, you should be regulated and on the hours. And what is the clear criteria there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, right now the criteria in the current statutes, we aren't provided the authority to regulate any of those amateur shows where the shows are exclusively amateur competitors. With the adoption of this bill, we would be able to broaden our authority to include both amateur and professional mixed martial arts competitions, and so the criteria would be, it would include both of those, and so we would no longer have unrestricted, unregulated mixed martial arts competitions within the state. We'd have the authority to oversee the conduct of those events.
Okay, follow up.
Please.
So, such as the martial arts, taekwondo, or things like that is excluded.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, yes, we've tried very hard to make sure to spell out that the classic styles of martial arts are not within the scope of our regulatory authority. We've tried to make that as clear as we can in the bill. Taekwondo, okay. Point karate, kung fu, all the others, the classic styles are not included within the authority of the commission.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, committee members?
Well, on that last, if I may, and then I suspect that the reason for that is that those are not areas where there's a likely issue of abuse of the conduct of the sport.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, that's correct. Those areas did not warrant, we felt, the need to be regulated. They don't seem to meet the mission of the commission to regulate.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything additional? Thank you both very, very much. Certainly appreciate your helping us here on this morning.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you ready for a motion?
Sure. Vice Chair Riley.
I move that the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 492.
Vice Chair Riley moves the dash A7 amendments to Senate Bill 492. Discussion on that motion. Is there any objection to their adoption? Not seeing or hearing any. They stand adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
I move Senate Bill 492 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Vice Chair Riley moves Senate Bill 492 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion? Not seeing or hearing any. On the question, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Dowd?
Aye.
Representative Grott?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
No.
Vice Chair Lim?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Witt?
Aye. Senate Bill 492, having received the majority vote, is sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now, Representative Gerard, would this be a bill?
I'll take it.
I know that it's been something that you've had an interest in.
I like boxing, so it doesn't hurt my feelings to carry it.
I was wondering if Representative Holby would carry it. I have some real nasty questions I want to ask.
You can ask them anyway.
I've got some answers.
The last day of the committee in this corner.
Falling apart on you.
All right. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 492. Thank you, committee members. And last up this morning, a work session on Senate Bill 665A, which I'm going to open. And Ellen, if you'd please review that bill for us.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Senate Bill 665A expands the development that's allowed in conjunction with a Speedway destination site in Morrow County, and it's expanded to include permanent housing units. It limits the time for the Department of Land Conservation and Development to review the proposed changes to the acknowledged comprehensive plan and land use regulations, declares an emergency, and it's effective on passage.
And thank you. And, Alan, it's my understanding that there are amendments that are yet to be drafted.
Yes, Chair Witt, that's my understanding as well. The Legislative Council has been working, I know, with the proponents and received the request somewhat late in the day yesterday, not due to anyone's fault, just the nature of where we are in the session. And so despite their efforts, they have not been able to get them completed by this morning, and I do not anticipate their completion anytime soon.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to nonetheless ask that Gary Neal and Dave Allen please come forward and at least conceptually discuss the amendments. And there is method to my madness here. My thinking is the chair considers this a very important bill, and I want it to sustain life. And in order to do that, we may have to send this to another committee today. And if we do, I would like to hear what your proposed amendments would be, so that the committee may decide to send it with a recommendation. So,
Chair, with members of the committee, David Allen, the Oregon International Speedway. We have been working fast and furious over the last 5 days, primarily Bob Rindy and myself from DLCD, with some input from other staff members at DLCD. The current version I'm on is version 8, not that that means anything to all of you. The primary drafting challenges in the amendments have related around, the footprint of the site that's going to be approved under the bill. And I've developed maps and shown them to DLCD. And in the current amendments, the expanded area is limited to township range and section numbers, which I've totaled up and shown the agency. The acreage of those sections is approximately 5,500 acres. The footprint of our development is actually about 4,400 acres. So we could potentially be amending that yet again to, for instance, instead of saying all of Section 27 of Township 4 North, Range 24 East, we would say the northeast quarter section of Section 27, which is all the project actually anticipates. So I think that, quite frankly, has been resolved. I haven't heard much more comment from the agency on that issue. The second issue has been an ongoing concern from the agency that the issue of associated uses and facilities, excuse me, and supporting uses and facilities, and by these in the bill, those are defined as transient lodging, restaurants, commercial, things that go along with the speedway that are not a racetrack. The agency has made very clear, and I think I have the bill drafted, that all of those uses can only be approved after a major motor speedway is built. They're concerned that this bill will be an end run, if you will, to be allowed to build a bunch of things that aren't affiliated with a major motor speedway. Certainly that's not our intent on this project. I know from a land use perspective, there's a drafting challenge. From a reality economics perspective, none of these associated uses or supporting uses economically make any sense unless there's a major draw to bring people out to that area. Building a strip mall or an outlet mall on this site, if you're at all familiar with the area, makes absolutely no sense. I understand that DLCD's concern is from a land use planning standpoint. I think the version of amendments that were forwarded to LC yesterday make that clear. A sub-issue on that was a definition of what associated uses and facilities are we talking about, what are we going to allow, what are we not going to allow. For instance, the agency and I have had conversations about, well, you don't intend on building a Home Depot or a Lowe's or something like that out there, and clearly we do not. So we've got a new definition in there that relates, it really takes language from the destination resort statute and says uses that would be needed by patrons of a major motor speedway but available as well to members of the general public. Again, drawing that nexus between these uses and the major motor speedway, I think we'd be very hard-pressed to say that patrons of a major motor speedway need a Home Depot. I don't know. Maybe people go to Talladega and buy lumber. I'm not familiar with any big box stores like that around speedways. So I think we've made good progress on that as well. One of the other issues, and I believe it kind of echoes what Thousand Friends testified to here last week, the bill includes a master planning provision such that we would master plan all of the various things you've seen on the map that I presented to you here a couple of weeks ago, so that when we start talking about public works and roads and pipes and wires and things of that nature, we're planning all that with a master vision of where things are going to go. The draft of the bill that we've been working on did not make clear what our intent was, which was to go through the ordinary, what we call a PAPA, post-acknowledgement plan amendment, to accomplish that master planning. In other words, in ORS 197.610 to 625, there is a process currently by which governments have to amend their comprehensive plan after it's been acknowledged. That's a PAPA. So we've made clear, both from the master planning and the local review process, that those statutes and those rules will still apply. And I think, again, that was something the agency was seeking and we built back into the bill. So I'm sure I'm missing something, and I know Director Shetterly and Bob Rendy are here as well, and they can certainly weigh in. I have a draft of the Version 8 amendments, and I don't know how the recommendation would go without a draft of amendments. It's been somewhat of a comedy of errors. Friday, my numerous emails to Mr. Rendy were caught by DAS's spam filter because I had too many people in the CC list, and it looked like spam to the computer. We figured that out about 3 o'clock, 3:30 on the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. And then yesterday, Mr. Rendy was waiting for comment from other staff members who are more familiar with the project and more familiar with some of the other issues in there. So we have done our darndest, I can assure you that, to get this thing in final form. I guess we didn't get high enough on the pecking order at LC at midnight last night while they were all typing away. So I'd be welcome to answer any questions from the committee about the current version that's been submitted to LC or where we go from here. With respect to the referral to another committee, I think a referral to rules obviously would give us the additional time. We've spoken with Director Shetterly, and I think he's in support of that as well. I think, quite frankly, if we could get till Friday, if there's some way this committee could meet on Friday, and I know you cannot, I think that's all the time we would need. So I'm concerned that this rules committee would generate a whole new process and drag things out again, but I think with just a little additional time we can get there, and I think the agency, if you inquire of them, would confirm that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. Committee members, I'm going to give Mr. Neal an opportunity if he has anything additional to add.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Neal, manager of the Port of Morrow. I really don't have anything to add to the proposed bill and the amendments, other than just to appreciate your interest and support in trying to help us get the tools we believe was necessary to help us bring this project forward. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I, again, want to express some the committee's appreciation for the number of miles that the two of you have spent here coming back and forth to Salem to make sure that we're fully apprised of everything as it develops. And I know that Mr. Allen's made trips, of course, outside of the formal hearings process, and your efforts have been greatly appreciated. Representative Gerard.
This is kind of more of a question for you, and that is, could we not just pass the latest amendments that they have? This would have to go to concurrence anyway, and then work out the details in concurrence.
I suppose that
is... I mean, what we're talking about is real technical.
suppose that is possible, Representative Girard, but I know that there are enough people that are interested in this and interested positively, some interested perhaps in they have various concerns about land use planning and whatnot, that the chair is reluctant to pursue that route at this point. Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Yes, and I'm not sure whether it's workable. If they all, the time needed is so Friday, could we get a special permission from the speaker? Maybe we can just meet on Friday and pass it out? Just one option, I'm just suggesting.
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Lim. And the problem with that option is, once that barn door is open, I'm afraid of all the cattle that come in. So,
okay.
But thank you for that suggestion. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two issues that occur to me from both of these suggestions. The first one is that the House and Senate rules might limit the capacity of a conference committee to make the kind of changes that we're talking about. I frankly don't know, because I don't know exactly what the changes are. But the rules do limit significantly what a conference committee is able to do as compared with last session. The other issue that I think in response to Representative Lim's point, the Speaker doesn't have the authority to grant that kind of an extension. That would require a suspension of the rules of the House. I can't imagine the House doing that, because if we did, every other committee would want the same thing.
And everyone else who has a bill out there would also want it. So thank you, Representative Barnhart. Appreciate that. Yes, Representative Dolan?
I want to be sure that we had some issues, and Lane is here. The two agencies, you've been over to LCDC, and the issue is it's not written down. The problems have been addressed. I want to be absolutely certain of process here. Are we going to hear from LCDC or?
It's my intention to ask them to come.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you both very, very much.
Chair,
thank you. Appreciate that. Director Shetterly, great to see you.
Good morning. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Rendy.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very, very much.
Members of the committee, for the record, Lane Shetterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I want to add my thanks, too, to David and Gary. We have been working with them for some time, and it has been quite a flurry. If David hadn't put Viagra in his email subject lines last week, we would have gotten those, I'm sure. You know,
I was afraid of that one.
I want to concur with David's description. He faithfully represented to you the points on which we are still that we have conceptual agreement for amendment of this bill. We have not seen the language from LC either, and we have committed to him, as he represented to you, that if you are inclined to pass this on to rules, we will continue to work with them, and assuming, and from the sounds of it this morning, we're in good shape to do it, assuming that we can get to an agreement on them, then we would use our resources, too, to encourage the Rules Committee to hear this bill and move it out.
Thank you very much. I thought that they burned alcohol in those race cars, but...
Yes, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Shetterly, I'm curious, as this proposed bill is written, it basically gives the land use planning authority to the county, and they develop their master plan. Does LCDC have any authority or review over that master plan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey. Actually, as written, that was one of our concerns about it. There were several concerns as written. What David Allen described to you is that as proposed, the amendments would be done more in the manner of traditional plan amendment, which does give us review, and not only us review, but it also provides for public participation in that review process as well. So that was one of our concerns, that as it began, this bill had a heavy dose of supersiding in it that causes us concern whenever that is done legislatively. We have requested and they have agreed to amend that part of the bill, and that's one of the things that we're waiting to see.
Yes, Representative Holby.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And so in that proposal, I'm wondering, does LCDC take into account transportation issues and ODOT's perspective on the capacity of the interstate to handle the transportation, as well as, the capacity of the other infrastructure that would be needed to handle the amount of people that would be coming to that area?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, let me ask Bob Rindy to weigh in on that. Bob has been having the detailed conversations with David, and we've also had a little bit of conversation with ODOT on this as well. Those are all considerations that we are cognizant of.
Thank you. Chair Witt, Representative Holby, for the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the department. First of all, just to clarify, LCDC itself will have no review authority of this. What we were seeking, and I think that we've all agreed on, is that in this traditional land use process, there is a notice to LCDC. We're a clearinghouse. Our notice will go to ODOT. It'll go to other agencies who may then participate, as we could, in the local review process. We are, just like anyone else, and the agencies are then simply a participant in the local plan amendment process. We may raise issues. If anybody is dissatisfied with that, it wouldn't come to LCDC. It would, just as all plan amendments, they would go to LUBA, which is a part of LCDC. So ODOT may participate in local process and raise their issues. I think ODOT is here and may have, may be able to answer your question more definitively of whether they have issues, but generally I haven't worked really closely with ODOT to understand all of their concerns, but I think they were close on getting those resolved.
Thank you, Mr. Rindy, and it is in fact my intention to ask ODOT to come forward here in a minute. Yes, Representative Bowen.
Mr. Chair, I want to be sure that I'm reluctant to let go of this. I am absolutely convinced now that LCDC is satisfied that we have a local process, that there will be public input, and that no major change will be slipped in, slipped out, slipped over, that it'll go through the local process, and people in Eastern Oregon will have plenty of opportunity to testify.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dolan, that is the agreed-upon conceptual amendments, again, not having seen the language, but that was one of our concerns that they acknowledged and have agreed to amend into the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, pardon me, follow-up. I want to ask the same 1,000 friends to be sure that they're satisfied.
Okay. We can thank you very much, Representative Dolan. We can hear from them as well this morning. I know that Director Shetterly and I have had discussions, and I had indicated to him that I thought it was perfectly appropriate for us to be apprised of any kind of land use decisions, kind of a checklist that would otherwise folks would go through to. So that if we are replacing kind of the normal order of land use decision making, that at least that would be available for folks to consider as they enter into the decision making process. It appears, however, that we may not be the ones that make that decision.
Actually, we're doing better than that. We're sending this back to the local people, and if they should not follow process, then your office would get involved. But if they follow process, everything's going to be just fine. You're simply going to provide oversight, which is normal and customary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dolan, we think that's correct. Again, conceptually, that's the understanding. And again, what Bob described is correct, that in a plan amendment, we received notice of that and an opportunity to review and comment. We would have the same standing to appeal a local decision that we thought was against law as any other participant would. We very rarely do. Typically, our opportunity to come in and participate provides a venue to correct any issues that may be occurring at the local level. But at least that avenue would be available through the plan amendment process.
If I might follow up, because this is school time for the school board. The people that are building the racetrack have free and open access to your office, to Bob, to check procedural things, to check appropriate planning, expertise, that sort of thing. And that's going to happen, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahlin, yes. It's interesting you mentioned that. Just we're seen as largely a regulatory agency. Frankly, apart from Measure 37, which is another subject entirely that we can avoid this morning, mostly what we do is technical assistance. It's providing local governments with guidance on how to avoid appeals and how to make decisions that would withstand an appeal. And so, yes, Morrow County would have access to us. The developers, those who are putting any plan amendment together, would have access to us through the plan amendment process. To receive my staff's expert guidance to do it in such a way that it complies not only with whatever this bill might ultimately provide, but any other applicable provisions of law.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Jamal.
Have you had conversations with the chair of rules about this bill? And are they going to be inclined to move it? I'm with Representative Dahlum. I'm looking at the makeup of this committee on rules, and I'm a little bit nervous about sending it there.
The answer to that, Representative Girard, is no. And I was expecting amendments here today. So further questions or discussion? I'm not seeing any. Thank you both very much. Certainly appreciate your input. Amy Joyce, we could have you come forward, please. Good morning. Welcome again.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation. Was speaking with Mr. Allen at the back of the room about some just slight concerns that the department had with the conceptual amendments that he did kindly provide to us late last week, and mostly just getting into the new amendments, the very clear statutory provision continuing under 197.434, that any transportation infrastructure that is deemed necessary by the road authorities due to the speedway, the destination resort, the theme park, and whatever else comes in under this, no matter where it is in the statute, anything transportation-wise that's necessitated is the responsibility financially of the developer. And I understand Mr. Allen agrees with that and has agreed to insert the couple of words into the amendment that would be necessary to make that perfectly statutorily clear. Hope I'm not misrepresenting anything that I discussed with Mr. Allen. So those were our concerns. He's addressing them, and I think we'll end up being okay when we see those final amendments.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful, at least for me. Representative Dahlum?
I'm going to ask you to do what I can't do. Conceptually, you're satisfied?
Yes, sir.
Then conceptually, I'm satisfied.
Thank you. Representative Polvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, you know, in light of your comments right there, would that responsibility to the of the developer extend beyond Morrow County if the transportation impacts extended beyond Morrow County?
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, the 197.434 current law, the developer is responsible for addressing financially traffic infrastructure impacts. And so if that impact is right there, the need for a new interchange, that's an impact right there. If it extends miles and miles down the interstate, and that's due to this this development, then to me that's what the statute says clearly now, and would continue to say under the amendment that we're expecting.
And I just want to say that I'm pleased to know that all the parties on this continue to work together, and it's again, to me at least, appears on the surface that
everyone has the best intentions, and we're trying to address all of the concerns. And I greatly appreciate that process that has been the order of the day, and I hope continues to. So thank you very much. Further questions of Ms. Joyce at this point? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much. Thank you. All right. Okay. Again, we're not in a public hearing, but is there anyone else that feels absolutely compelled that they have a piece of information that they need for our decision making here today? I'm not seeing any.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a very important piece of legislation that we need to get done, and therefore I move that we send this to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent to rules.
Thank you, Vice Chair Riley. Vice Chair Riley moves Senate Bill 665A to the floor with a subsequent referral to elections, ethics, and rules. Discussion on that motion. Yes.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify that the motion was with a due pass or without recommendation?
You were reading my mind. I was just about to ask that.
And the only reason I bring that up is I believe he did say due pass. I am a little bit concerned not seeing the amendments that we're actually voting on, that we're making a recommendation for a due pass on a conceptual conversation as opposed to looking at amendments that we're sending on. So I do have a concern with that.
A lot of conceptual due pass.
A virtual due pass.
A virtual.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you. Representative Holby's concern. One of the reasons we don't do conceptual amendments, at least if they're of any complexity, is because it's very, very easy to slip up. And I think sending the bill to rules is an important thing to do in order to keep it alive and keep the subject in front of the legislature. At the same time, I think that I would prefer that the sense of the committee that this subject should be addressed should be handled informally rather than through the motion. And I would hope that what passes here is a motion that sends it under rules without recommendation. And then I can tell you that I will certainly approach the chair of the Rules Committee, and I'm sure the chair will as well, asking that the bill be heard and that the amendment that has yet to be drafted be considered, along with the issues that have been raised this morning.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Vice Chair Lim.
It's my opinion that we heard the testimony,
yes,
from the persons who are doing the project, and also the Department of Transportation, and also the land use. And it's very positive comment. It seems to me they are working closely, and I can trust what they are doing. If they're deeply involved, working together. So I don't have any problem sending this with a strong recommendation. When we are sending without recommendation, we are sending a wrong message. And after I heard all the testimony, I feel positively this is a good deal. And so I'm willing to support with the recommendation.
Thank you, Vice Chair Lim. Yes, Representative Gerard.
I support the motion as it was proposed. As most of you know, I come from a rural district, and this is a long ways away from my district, but I feel the legislature this session has done really an injustice to rural Oregon, and I think this is one of the few bills that really would benefit rural Oregon, and I would be kind of offended if we sent it down there without recommendation.
Thank you. Additional discussion? Yes, Representative Ball?
We have spent a lot of time on this. I have not gotten to know so many people so well with such few bills. And I really do think, because we do have an understanding of this bill, I share some of my colleague, Representative Hobie's concerns, but I don't believe they're going to have the time to know this bill like we do. And if they know, perhaps the term recommendation has a formal meaning in this building. But certainly we could send it with something stronger than just, here, take over our baby. I would like them to know that the committee, perhaps a unanimous vote out of here, and mention that.
Thank you, Representative Dahlem. The chair wants to clarify that the motion before us is with a due pass recommendation, a referral to committee. Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing. Yes, Representative Holden.
Mr. Chair, as much as I would, you know, like to see this project move forward, and I think it does provide some great economic potential to it. You know, I just am going to have to probably vote no on the due pass recommendation, quite frankly, simply because I don't have what I'm voting on in front of my face, and you know, I get a little nervous with an amendment that is going forward with this and misconstruing that. It makes me very uncomfortable. Because I've seen a lot of things with just a couple of words of difference end up being drastically different. And so I have no problem moving this with and voting for a referral to rules. But with a due pass recommendation, I'm not going to be able to support that.
Thank you, Representative Holby. Vice Chair Lim.
Okay, and my opinion, we will have another chance on the floor to debate on this issue. We can vote no or yes after it's passed out from the rules. So we can address at the time. I think it's appropriate if we send this up with a strong two-pass recommendation. That's my additional comment.
Thank you, Representative Dahlem.
I'm going to have to concur with Representative Holby. I've heard the testimony. I know it's conceptual, but I have raised Cain on getting amendments in front of my nose and being asked to vote on them while I'm perusing them. So I want to send, I want those people to understand how hard we've worked on this, but the due pass without seeing the amendment, I have no idea what it's going to say. It could say all race drivers will wear clown suits.
I think that's a good idea.
I want to see it. So,
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I move to amend the motion by substituting without recommendation for due pass.
Thank you very much, Representative Barnhart. I've been waiting for that. On the motion. Yes.
Rather than just talking about it, let's see where the votes are.
Yeah.
On the decision. That's my point. And I'll support the motion I just made.
Thank you very much. Representative Barnhart moves an amendment to the motion, which is a referral to elections, ethics, and rules. Without recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Vice Chair Riley.
Yeah, I will go along with whatever we want to do. I want to get this done and moved over there and let them work on it and let them get it through. What I wanted to ask is there anything in between these two things? Are these the only options we have?
That would be, as far as I know, I think our only options. So
the rules are very clear. Unfortunately, there are only a few things we can do. If we're going to send it to another committee, these are the only two things we can do.
Well, I'll be going to the other committee and telling them that we really strongly recommend this to get out of there. I will go along with that.
And I will be doing the same, Vice Chair Riley. And it's just my own feeling that I'm sensing from a number of members that they would like a strong recommendation. And quite frankly, I think a unanimous out of here is probably stronger than a split vote on something at this point. So, further discussion on the amendment.
the amendment to the amendment.
Yeah. Yes. Is there any objection to its adoption?
I object.
To Representative Barnhart's motion.
All right. Barry, would you call the roll on that, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Dell?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
No.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
No.
Vice Chair Riley?
No.
Chair Witt?
Aye.
I said it.
That vote again.
Vote is 4-3.
All right. It's amendments adopted. All right. On the motion to refer to elections, ethics, and rules. Further discussion.
Without, this is a question.
Without recommendation.
This is our only option. It's either if we don't do this, it dies.
Yes, that's correct.
It's like sending your girlfriend home with you. Don't finish the sentence. I don't want to do this.
I don't want to know.
Yes, Representative Holden, please bail me out.
Mr. Chair, you know, I don't want to, you know, diminish the importance of this bill to many folks, and you know, I think each, as been pointed out, each member of this committee has the ability to go over to the subsequent committee and advocate for this bill. But I do appreciate that, you know, we need to be cognizant of what we're recommending and what we're not recommending, and not having something to see what we're recommending is sort of problematic for me. So I just wanted to make those comments. I'm not trying to, you know, put a roadblock in front of a race. Thank you.
No,
thank you. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
The way to do that, the latter, is simply to defeat the motion and let the bill die. The fact that we're sending it on is an indication we're interested in it. And I would also adopt Representative Holmes' remarks as my own as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further?
I can only hope that that committee spends as much time poring over committee minutes as we do.
Thank you. On the question to the main motion, Barry, would you please call the roll?
Representative Barter?
Aye.
Representative Dell?
Aye.
Representative Grubb?
Yeah.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lynn?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Witt?
Aye. Having received the majority vote, Senate Bill 665A is referred without recommendation to the Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Unanimously.
And I'm going to close that work session. And committee members, anything further to come before us? This is, we have completed our hearings as of this point. Anything further to come before us? We will, interim work, be handling our committee's report from the informational part of our committee, and our two vice chairs are working on that presently. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we close this committee, I just wanted to thank the committee assistant, Barry, and Ellen, for their work, and you, Mr. Chair, for giving us a lot of topics to consider, some great information, some great bills. Really appreciate being on this committee.
Thank you very, very much, Representative Holden. And I would just say that I consider myself to probably be the luckiest chair, not only in the House, but probably in this legislature, I can get that word out. We have worked together, I think, exceptionally well. And I think we have, by the time we have completed our committee's report, we will have some work here that we will be able to use as a guidepost, not only in our committee's work, but I am also hopeful that our workforce and economic development department, our community colleges, and our governor's office will find that work useful as well. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we are adjourned.